The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And yes, it is time for our college football segment with the one and only Jason Peter. But we are going to open things up in our conversation with a quick hit on the Dallas Cowboys. Their big win on Wednesday night, very impressive, 24-17 on the road. And Jason, we wanted you to weigh in on that. I've been a big-time Cowboy fan for a long time. And what was your thoughts and what did we learn from the Cowboys?
Well, after the first game, I think they're better than they were last year. I think Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones and the staff, they went out. Well, first they identified their problems and their issues, and a lot of those were on the back end of that defense in the secondary. And so they go out and they get Brandon Carr from Kansas City, and then they draft the Claiborne kid at LSU, and they're pretty strong now in the secondary. And I think the thing that any secondary guy will tell you is that the thing that can help them the most is a dominant pass rush or a pass rusher up front. And then you obviously draw the connection to Marcus Ware, and he's arguably the best pass rusher in the NFL. So, you know, it hurt a little bit because they're my Giants and certainly not Carolina, who I played for. But with the Giants, you know, it's the team I rooted for as a young kid, and I still pull for the Giants. But I think when you look at Dallas and that side of the ball on defense and the improvements they made, as well as then you go to the offensive side, and Romo is he's Romo. I mean, he's a guy, he gets a bad rap, I think, from national people, just because you have a few plays here and there where he either threw a pick or the fumbled snap, and they were big plays, not to minimize, I guess, the magnitude of those plays, but football, it's more than just, you know, a play here, a play there. It's playing for an entire 60 minutes, and he brings an element to the game or to the position of quarterback that a lot of teams now are trying to have, and that's a guy that can move around in the pocket and not be so stationary. And you know, when you look at the game that they played against the Giants, that defensive line the Giants have, it's arguably the best from end to end. And it really shows, I think, when you don't keep contained on a quarterback or you open a seam for him, if he is somewhat mobile, he's going to make you pay for that, and that's what Romo did by just extending plays and giving his receivers a chance to kind of break off their patterns, and then it just becomes a game of backyard football, and it doesn't matter who you have back there in the secondary. Those guys can only cover those receivers for so long, and sooner or later they're going to get open, and that's what happened, and Romo was able to capitalize on that. If you're a Cowboy fan, you got to be pleased. Obviously, it's the first game, so you got to put everything in perspective. You just don't know how the Giants will end up being this year, but it's a divisional game, and both teams wanted to make a point early in the year, and Dallas obviously came out victorious.
Yeah, you know, Dallas Cowboys off to a fast start, but, you know, Jason, a lot of pressure on Tony Romo, but I think one thing that I learned, you know, from looking at the Cowboys is that they seem to be a lot more mentally tough, and one of the biggest storylines we heard Tony Romo talk about is his terrific teammate in Jason Witten. I mean, the guy that was supposed to stay home with a lacerated spleen, I mean, he showed a lot of gut, a lot of heart, and, you know, Tony said, he's the best teammate. We're lucky to have a guy like this in our locker room.
Yeah, and I think if you're a member of that team and you know the issue that's plaguing Jason Witten, and it's the spleen, it's something that I'm sure if he said, look, I don't feel comfortable going out there and playing, that the Dallas training staff would have said, all right, yeah, we understand. You know, we get it. We'll give it another week. But the guy's a trooper and he suits up. And as a teammate, you can't help but notice that and say, well, geez, if this guy's going out there with a lacerated spleen, then, you know, I got to go out and give my best. And that's kind of, I think, the moments of a team, you know, over the course of a year where guys can kind of rally around each other and use one another for motivation and fighting through injuries. Because in the NFL, there are more times than not where you have guys that will take a few days off from practice for a hangnail, or, you know, maybe something is bothering them. They got a bad headache. You know, guys, sometimes they just want to play on Sundays. But, you know, Jason Witten is he's a competitor, and if he's got that opportunity to be out there, then he's going to be out there. But, you know, I also think when you look at that offensive side of the ball, DeMarco Murray. I mean, what a game he had with rushing for about 130 yards. And let's face it, I mean, the run game is something that is not used by all NFL teams as much as it used to be. I mean, you used to talk about a giant Cowboy game or a giant Redskin or a Cowboy Redskin or the Eagles games, and you were thinking, man, we're going to have to buckle it up here because we're going to try to establish that ground game. And now it's kind of been a thing of the past. You know, it's become such a pass-happy league that a lot of these teams are just focused on their air attack, and that's how they're going to try to win games. But I think everything in football is cyclical, and you know, with DeMarco Murray, I mean, I remember being down at the OU-Nebraska game a few years ago. I think it was maybe 08, and I was down on the sidelines for that in Norman. And I remember, number one, I was taken by Oklahoma's team, just the eye test of their players. But one of those guys that caught my eye was DeMarco Murray. And he just, physically, he reminded me of a guy that played at Nebraska in Lawrence Phillips, just by the eye test. And Lawrence was, you know, one of the best players that I was ever on the field with, but DeMarco looked just like him, the same body type, big, tall, strong, can run, can cut, can do everything you want a running back to do. And the Dallas got like the steal of the draft with drafting him a year or so ago, and I think it was a third or fourth round pick, something like that. And you know, here he is. He's right now, it's kind of a 50-50, 60-40 type deal with Felix Jones, but from the looks of things on Wednesday night, this is going to be DeMarco's team. You know, Felix didn't have the best game in the world, but DeMarco certainly shined, and he's taking every opportunity that he gets and making the most of it.
And what's remarkable about DeMarco Murray is the fact that, you know, Jason, he's had to fight through a number of injuries as well.
Yeah, I know he had I believe it was an ACL that he had coming out of college. And, you know, it's usually 2 years, especially with those skill guys where, you know, they're constantly cutting and making those sharp moves where they finally feel comfortable out there again on the football field. And that would put DeMarco right around that time frame right now as being a couple of years after that injury. And if Wednesday night was a sign of things to come, I think if you're a Cowboy fan, you got to be excited.
Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, this segment is being sponsored by our good friends at Mercer Well Service. And we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And you can email us at info@eradiosports.com. And Jason, just a moment ago, you had talked about the Giants. You know, you grew up in the Jersey area. You know, they've always been your favorite team. And I think your brother also played for them as well. What were some of the lessons that you learned from the Giants and what they will have to do to improve?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure up in New York, they already started with it's time for Tom Coughlin to retire, or, you know, he's going to get fired. And, you know, they were making these same cases before they beat Dallas in the last game of the regular season last year that maybe Coughlin's time was up. And then all of a sudden, you know, they beat Dallas and they get hot and they go on to win a Super Bowl. But I think in the NFL, especially teams that have been successful, they understand the importance of each game, but they also understand that there's more than just one game to the season. And he'll have them ready to play. I think they were a little weak on the back end in the secondary of that defense. I think the former Nebraska first rounder, Prince Amukamara, who the Giants drafted a couple of years ago in the first round, has been plagued by injuries. Well, he was injured again, so he didn't play in that game. But I think they realize what kind of team they have, and I think they're a team that's just as good as Dallas. I think if they have everybody who's full strength, but ultimately it comes down to executing the plays that are called. And I think in that Dallas Giants game in the beginning, if you're a Dallas fan, you're a little worried because there were some penalties, jumping off sides, and those are the things that if you're going to be a championship team, you just can't afford to do those things. You got to take advantage of every opportunity you get with the ball to take it down the field and score. But the Giants they didn't take advantage of their opportunities. They didn't really help Eli out too much in the beginning of the game. A lot of drop balls by the receivers. Victor Cruz being one of them, who was, besides Eli, he was probably the player that the media latched onto the most last year in New York. He had a horrible game against Dallas, but I think you just got to put everything in perspective, and you just kind of put that one behind you, and you get ready to play the next game. And there's always a lot of improvement, whether you're talking college or the NFL, usually from that first game to the second and to the third, because now you're able to really get a full four quarters of your starters up there executing a game plan. And you get to see kind of yourself up on tape and making mistakes, whether it's a technique thing or whether it's an execution type thing. You're able to see yourself up there. And there's usually a lot of growth from that first game to the next couple.
Well, I will say that, I'm a big fan of Eli Manning. And you had just said, Jason, that, he needs some help, but he also needs some protection, doesn't he?
Yeah, everybody needs that. And if you're playing the quarterback position, and the Giants have, the offensive line has always been strong. Last year, they lost a few guys to free agency, and they went elsewhere to play. But you can't really dwell on those things when you're in the NFL. Guys move on, guys retire, guys get injured, and you just got to plug the next guy in. The moment that you sign your contract in the NFL, the people upstairs that make those personnel decisions, they're already game planning and putting together something for the guy who's going to take over for you. And that's just the reality of the NFL. And it's not just one team that goes through it. It's 32 teams that go through it. I think a big part of their game that they're probably going to miss is the power back in Brandon Jacobs. I think when the Giants returned that interception down to the 4 or 2 yard line, here you have three opportunities to get that ball in the end zone from the 2. You got to get it in. You got to get it in. It was a momentum killer. Here you got Dallas coming into your house, first game of the season. All eyes are on you. It's a national televised game, and Dallas survived the storm. They weathered the storm, and every coach kind of uses that phrase for when you go on the road, because you got crowd that's involved in it, and the excitement of the season starting again. And Dallas did a tremendous job with keeping them out of the end zone, and everything just kind of went Dallas's way from there on out. But it's a long season, and I think a thing that I said to you a few weeks ago was usually the team that's standing there in the end is most likely a team that looks the same at the end of the season as in the beginning.
Right.
And what I'm referencing are injuries. You just, you know, nobody wants to get injured. It's just stuff that happens, but you hope it's not any of your key guys, your big-time playmakers, because if you're a team that's bitten by that injury bug, chances are it's going to be a struggle for you.
You know, Jason, I'm glad you bring up the injuries, because I did want to ask you, yourself, during your time in the NFL, had to fight through a number of neck injuries, and have you ever experienced anything or talked to players that have had a lacerated spleen? I mean, did your brother ever go through anything like that? I mean, what kind of pain has Jason Witten, has he had to deal with?
I don't know. I've never had the spleen issue. The only other time I really remember it kind of on a personal level was a kid in high school who was on the high school team. He had something, and I think it was something that happened towards the end of the year, and he just ended up missing the rest of the year. So, you know, it's something that when you start talking about the internal organs of your body, you know, especially with everything that we know today, I mean, all the focus is on the concussions and the issues that can lead to continuing to play with concussions. But anytime you talk about, like I said, an internal organ, I mean, that's something that you got to be careful. You got to be cautious. So I know that Jason Witten saw a expert when they got to New York, because they didn't know whether or not he was going to play or not, all the way pretty much up till game time. But when he got cleared, the doctor said, you know, you can play if you want. You're not going to hurt it anymore. I'm sure he didn't have to think twice about it. You ask any player, you give them the opportunity to play, the 9 out of 10 times they're going to play.
Jason Peter giving us a full recap of the Dallas Cowboys' big road win this past Wednesday night. Jason, we're going to move ahead now. We've got several games that are on the watch for college football. Of course, Florida is going to be on the road in College Station, Florida at Texas A&M. And last weekend, I did have a chance to watch a little bit of Florida's play, and I was not impressed. I thought they struggled mightily against Bowling Green.
Yeah, what a disappointment. If you're Florida or Florida fan, it just, these teams, and you're seeing more and more of these smaller FBS teams come in and compete with the big boys. And you try to put your finger on what is it? Why is this happening? Is it the type of kid that we have today, where there is a lot of that sense of entitlement where, I play for Florida, I'm walking out on the field, this is Bowling Green, these guys are going to bow down to us, and we're just going to run through them. And, these kids now, number one, they look forward to that opportunity because it's kind of their bowl game. Here they are, they get a chance to go out and shock the world. So they're going to give everything they got. But number two, you also have a lot of these FBS schools that have legitimate Division I players, because nowadays kids, they sign their letters of intent and they show up at their university and they want to play in year one or year two. And if they don't, rather than stick it out and maybe they get to play their senior year or junior year, they'd rather just transfer and play immediately rather than transfer somewhere else and sit out. So you're getting a lot of quality players that are showing up at some of these schools. But, when you look at the Florida Bowling Green game, it was just it was kind of embarrassing, I mean, for Florida. You just they really showed up and kind of smacked them in the mouth, and I think we're hoping for more out of Will Muschamp and that team. And when you look forward to their Texas A&M game, and I know it's a game that we picked on the radio show, and I ended up picking Florida just because I feel like they're going to have that growth from game one to game two, and they were able to get this kind of wake-up call, and with the type of guy, the type of coach that Muschamp is, that he's going to make sure that they're prepared to play. And on the other side, you got A&M, which, I think Kevin Sumlin, it's the first year, thing they have going for them is, well, they don't have anything up on tape because their first game was canceled because of the hurricane. And does that favor them or not? You know, is there the element of surprise? Yeah, but then you have, well, maybe there's not that continuity yet, or the execution. They got to go through that first game where, you know, they make the mistakes. So it's a game that you can look at and you can make a case for either side. I ended up, like I said, going with Florida, just because I think they're also going to want to make a statement to A&M and the fans and the people responsible for putting the billboard up a couple miles from Gainesville that took a shot at Florida fans and really at SEC fans in a lot of ways. But A&M is now part of that conference, and I think Florida's going to want to welcome them with open arms and a good beatdown.
Well, Texas A&M, Jason, they do make history on Saturday when it finally will play its first game as a member of the SEC. And, you know, we were talking about Florida, you know, how they had problems last weekend with Bowling Green. What about Oklahoma? I thought that was a stunner as far as UTEP. I mean, they were really hanging with Oklahoma through those first three quarters.
Yeah, I think watching that game, the area that I think you're surprised at is how they got beat up front. Like, here you have Oklahoma offensive line, and it's been an issue in past years, and Bob Stoops has made it public about the issues with the offensive line. He's challenged those guys publicly before in the media. I think you just kind of, you know, it's the one area that, going back kind of the difference between the Division I schools and the FBS schools, you ask any coach the most difficult position to recruit, most likely he'll say defensive tackle. It's just hard to find big guys out there that can run. But just in general, I think when you compare those schools, they may have some skill guys that can run 4.3, 4.4. Maybe they didn't get a D1 scholarship because they're 5'9", 5'10", whereas, you know, a lot of these schools are looking for receivers that are 6 feet tall and up. So you can get quality skill guys at those positions, but it's hard to find those big guys, the linemen, whether it's offensive line or defensive line, and that's usually the area of the football game that you can just visibly with the naked eye just kind of see the difference in those schools. Usually if they have, FBS schools have 300 pounders, they're, you know, most of that weight is kind of in the belly area, and they're not a pretty 300 pounds like you get at some of the big schools. So that's the area that you expect them to dominate.
Right.
And especially there's depth issues, too, that even if they're able to put a quality offensive line or defensive line out there, more than likely there's not going to be, you know, backups that can compete at that same kind of that same level. So the area that you expected Oklahoma to dominate would be on the line of scrimmage, but it just didn't happen. And I'm sure that's got to frustrate the heck out of Bob Stoops. So, you know, we'll see what happens in game two for the Sooners, but that's not the way to start it off. You know, I think they had the first ranking, the preseason ranking, I think they were 5 or something like that. I know a lot of people were picking them as kind of a sleeper pick, so to speak, to make it to the national championship game. But
correct,
if they play anything like they did against UTEP, then they're going to be in some trouble.
And their competition this weekend, of course, is Florida A&M at Oklahoma. So they're going to look to kind of clean things up and turn it around. We've got to take time. We've got to hit on Nebraska. Now, this is a game I did get a chance to watch a little bit last week, and it seems like you guys really took care of business, 49-20. And I did have a chance to listen to your show, 1620thezone.com, if you want to check out Jason and his host, Gary Sharp. And I thought one of the questions that was interesting that Gary had posed was, you know, is Nebraska better off than they were 4 years ago under the leadership of Bo Pelini? And how did you respond? How did you answer to that, Jason?
Yeah, it was hard. I'm not really like the guy who gives the political answer where he makes he makes it look good no matter what. You know, I think it's hard to answer that either just yes or no. I think there are areas that they've definitely gotten better, but then I also think there's areas that they've either plateaued or they've gotten worse at. And I think after this year, you'll be able to really give an honest assessment and tell where they're at, because the thing that Nebraska has lacked has been discipline, whether it's in execution of jumping off sides or, you know, taking a swipe at players out on the game field, you know, bows, tirades out on the sidelines. I mean, you know, people think that that doesn't have any correlation with, you know, the play that's happening out on the field. But, you know, for me, as a player, when a coach is preaching to you about discipline, 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 but then you're over on the sidelines and you're out of control and you're screaming and you're yelling and you're telling the ref where he can shove it and this and that, well, they're saying to themselves, well, this is just talk. But, you know, him trying to tell us about discipline, because look at him. I mean, he's got no control over there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. He was much better on the sidelines in this first game. But also, I think, ultimately, at the end of the day, you are judged by wins and losses as a coach. And Nebraska has been around that 9-win mark, 10 wins, you know, with a win in a bowl game. And 9 wins was always kind of the standard with Tom Osborne and you know, some of the other coaches, but there was also one fewer game back then. So really, you know, the standard, if it, you're kind of going to keep it along the same line, should be 10 wins at least every year. And I think Bo has done that and then just been just short, but it's what some of those wins look like, or what some of those losses actually look like. And when you look at Nebraska last year, 2 losses, Michigan and Wisconsin, both kind of national televised games, and Nebraska was embarrassed in both of them. And there's usually, I think other than maybe 2010, there's been about 2 games each year that Nebraska just has not been competitive in. And that's the thing that you can't have. You got to have your team always being competitive, always in the hunt, always there at the end of the game trying to win that game. And you got to eliminate those games, as well as there's always the fluke game that this team has had, whether it was Iowa State a few years ago coming into Lincoln, and I think we fumbled the ball 9 times or something like that, and they ended up winning, I think, 9-7 or something. You had last year, Northwestern came into Memorial Stadium and beat us. They've been very kind of Jekyll and Hyde. I think it was the week before Northwestern, they completely dominated a good Michigan State team, and then, like I said, they follow that up with Northwestern. So they have to get better consistency. They got to be competitive in more games. But, you know, going into this year, a lot of the attention was on the offense and Taylor Martinez, and I've been one of his biggest critics, just with the throwing motion, the leadership angle, you know, basic execution. And he went out and had a great game. I'm the first one to raise my hand and say that he played probably better than anyone did on the offensive side of the ball. I think you also put things in perspective and say that, look, it was Southern Miss. It's a Southern Miss team that's in transition with a new head coach in Ellis Johnson. So you got to be cautious about, you know, some people out here want to already create the Taylor Martinez for Heisman website, and I'm just not ready to do that just yet. But it's a start, and it's game one, and he did what he was supposed to do. Unfortunately, the defense struggled, and, you know, that was a concern, the defensive line going into the season. And if they don't get something going on or find some young guys that can play, I think they're going to be in trouble. I think that's going to be the area where teams will test them. I think UCLA will test them this weekend. They're going to try to get that ball in between the tackles and just kind of stuff it down their throat.
That's right, Jason. The Huskers are on the road. They're at UCLA. Kickoff is set for 7:30, but they are off to a great start. So we'll see if the momentum continues. Jason, Peter, you were strong and steady this weekend. We certainly appreciate you dropping by, and we'll catch up with you next week for another full recap and preview of the college football games. Thanks again so much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.